Welcome to the very first episode of Inside Assemble AI, the podcast where we explore how artificial intelligence is transforming business strategy and innovation. I am Mac, and alongside with my co-host Sam, we are here to cut through the AI hype and bring you the real insights from leaders who are implementing AI strategically in their organizations. Today's episode is called AI in Strategic Viewpoint, and we are diving deep into critical questions. How do you move beyond the fear and the hype to actually use AI as a strategic advantage?
Hi, this is Sam. Echoing what Max said, we'll explore how to enhance human creativity with AI, practical implementation strategies for small businesses, and what the future holds for AI in marketing and business strategy. Our guest today has spent over a couple of decades at the intersection of marketing, technology, and entrepreneurship, and we are excited to hear more from him on the discussion topic. So whether you're a C-suite executive exploring AI adoption, or a marketing professional looking to stay ahead of the curve, or a technology leader planning your AI strategy, this conversation is for you.
So today we are joined by Phil Nugent, a business consultant, a strategic marketer, the founder, the editor-in-chief of Colorado AI News. He is a strong advocate for both independent journalism and Colorado's vibrant entrepreneurial community. His background is in branding, copywriting, digital marketing, training, and PR. He's a meticulous writer and an AI enthusiast, an amateur futurist, and a non-practicing attorney. Phil serves one of the executive committee of Rocky Mountain AI Interest Group, also known as RMAIC. He has an MBA from University of Colorado Boulder, a JD from William and Mary Law School, and a BA from University of Virginia. Phil, we are so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Mac, and thank you, Sam. And it's a real honor to be here and to start off the podcast. So thank you.
All right, let's get to the business end of this episode, the Q&A section. Phil, you have spent over a couple of decades at the intersection of marketing, technology, and entrepreneurship. What inspired you to not only integrate AI into your work with clients, but also launch Colorado AI News as a platform to spotlight the voices of AI experts and evangelists in this region? We'd like to know your journey.
Wonderful. Be careful what you ask for, because I could talk about this question alone for a couple of hours. Yeah, it was, I guess most of us here in the room and listening and watching, remember November 30th, 2022, or, when ChatGPT launched its public version. And if we don't remember that date, we remember in the weeks afterward, right? When it started making news in a really big way. And, I might not be the smartest tool in the shed, but it didn't take much for me to realize just what a big deal this was. And, frankly, I'm old enough to remember the web's early days back in the 90s. And this felt even bigger than that, even larger than that. And, that was by definition huge. Nobody saw this coming except those, of course, who saw it coming since the 1950s, slowly, and then an AI winter, and then slow incremental progress, and then another AI winter. So it's been a long haul, even for those who've been intimately involved with AI. I can't place myself in that category. I did not see this coming, and was flabbergasted to see just how good it was right off the bat in late 2022, early 2023. So a couple things going on there. Just as I realized that the web was going to change everything for marketers and for businesses, for networking, for meeting people just across the board, for conducting business, I saw that AI was going to at least be the equal of that. And in terms of being disruptive, I can't think of much that's more that could be more disruptive than AI, especially if you get into robotics, if you get into things like the singularity, you know, when will humans and robots sort of come together? And already we've got Musk and others working on plans to integrate that now. How can we all be smarter? How can we all be better? So we'll put that on a side shelf for now. But I do think the next 5 to 10 years are going to be unbelievably interesting, to say the least, to all of us. Mind bending, head rolling. So I looked at AI and realized, wow, marketing is going to be affected in a big way. Business is going to be affected, as I said. What can I do with that? How can I use that to help my clients? How can we all become better? And I think the whole idea is, or a good sort of mantra to think about when it comes to AI is, how can AI help me be the best Phil Nugent that I am, right? And so I think it's good not to think of it so much as a competition between you and others, or even between you and AI, but think of it, how can I be the best I can be? And I hate if that sounds cliched or hackneyed, but it's legitimate, right? Because AI can help us to be so much better than we imagine. I mean, one crazy example, I'm doing artwork, you know, these days. And that was never anything. I haven't done artwork since, you know, what, eighth grade art or something, right? And yet it is allowing me to do that. It will allow me to, you know, fulfill some dreams in music. I haven't had the bandwidth to get in there, but I'm dying, right? I want to start making music. It's something I've wanted to do for years and years. So don't want to get off track with all that, but that was the NCG marketing, the helping my clients, and I work with professionals for the most part. So, lawyers, attorneys, people like that. We'll get into that a bit more later, perhaps. But the other piece of the pie, you asked me about Colorado AI News, and, you know, I'd always been something of a news junkie, let's call it for what it is, and very much into the news and what's going on and trying to keep up with things and figure out where they're going. And I realized fairly early that, well, I go back 20 years here in Colorado and Boulder, and with the Colorado and Boulder tech community, the Denver tech community, and it's always impressed me, and the folks have really impressed me, and the startups, even as I feel like, you know, to some folks, we're flyover country here, right, in Colorado. And so we don't get half the attention that Silicon Valley does, or a tenth of the, right, of the attention. And we maybe have a tenth of the people. But because of the fact that local media has fallen, let's say, kind of by the wayside over the last 20 years, I felt like it was really time for someone to step up and start, you know, singing some of the praises, telling some of the stories of the Colorado AI community here, to be specific, and say, hey, look what's going on in Colorado. We've got cool stuff. And then a tie-in with that has been that I've brought in other writers. And incidentally, I'm always interested in folks who are interested in writing for, being a content creator for Colorado AI News in some way, because it can be a great way to brand yourself. Because I'm a news media platform, Google loves us. And so it can be a great way for people. That's my pitch, to get their name, attached to AI and all these great thoughts on AI. So I just, gosh, I guess the last thing that I'd want to say about that was, I felt it was important to have balanced coverage. I'm a big advocate of what I call the B word, balance. And that's something that's hard to find these days, I think, in news coverage and everything. And, you know, I didn't want to be either a total rah-rah cheerleader Nor did I want to be a doomer. And I think the truth is somewhere in between, right? There's going to be some good. There's going to be some bad. And then the final point I'll make about that is I felt like the people and the non-techies and business people and regular people needed to have some kind of a guide, if you will. And, I'm not sure we're there yet. We're not necessarily where we want to be with Colorado AI News, but someplace where they could go to figure out, is this just hype or is there something real here? And I know too many educated, and intelligent people who have not been paying attention to AI and don't want to, right? Because it scares them. We can maybe talk about that. I'm like, you can't ignore this. You need to pay attention to this. So that's this other service I'm trying to provide, if you will. So, sorry, that was a long answer to your question there. But
nope, thanks for fascinating. I love that the way you mentioned that the AI is actually augmenting human intelligence, letting us do something that we probably haven't had a chance to try. Like your passion for creative arts are getting rejuvenated right now because of AI and stuff. And also thank you for doing the hard work and stepping up to put the Colorado AI community on the map, because that's definitely a groundbreaking work that you have been doing right now. Having said that, I'm going to pass it over to Mac for the second question.
Yeah, that was actually a very nice explanation that what Phil just mentioned. So now let's get a little bit more practical. So Phil, you talk about the strategic use of AI. So how do you exemplify this? Can you walk us through an example that where you apply AI thoughtfully in your client workflows, especially around content creation or planning?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Happy to. So there are a lot of elements to that term strategic, right? And may have noticed I love that word. More importantly, I love the thought process. My marketing company that I've had for 15 years is called NCG Strategic Marketing. And the reason why is because I felt it was important to show that I'm not the kind of marketer who just throws things up against the wall, hopes that something sticks, right? We need to think these things through. And while Mark Zuckerberg has definitely some positives, I've never quite been a believer in his, move fast and break things. I kind of like better move fast and try things. How about that? Can we do that? And I think a lot of people need to be almost carried over that bridge because they're scared to try things. And I think trying things is so essential, right? And it's so essential today because you can't wait, right? You can't wait anymore. That said, what's the other part of strategic is thinking carefully, really analyzing, bringing in the data. And for, me working with a client to figure out what his or her strengths are, perhaps even what their weaknesses are, how they can best position themselves in the marketplace. What does their competition look like? What do they most like doing? What types of clients or customers do they most like to have? All these types of things we pull into that. So related to going slow, relatively speaking, I think caution is an important word with AI right now, right? Because it still hallucinates. AI still hallucinates too often for my comfort. And when you're dealing with, high risk types of industries, fields, events, you have to be extra careful when you're dealing with legal events, if you're dealing with medical events, financial, someone's mortgage and, anything else, all these things, you have to be extra careful. You're not just selling tchotchkes on the web, right? And so we have to be careful about the fact that it hallucinates. It still hallucinates. And ultimately, what do we need to do? We can get into this more. We need to check everything, right? And you know, the old saying that goes, measure twice and cut once. Well, you kind of almost want to measure three times and cut once here. And with cut meaning if it's published, you know, measure three times before you publish that thing. That's kind of, you know, one of my thoughts. Ultimately, I think strategic beginner subject matter expertise is more important than ever. In this world. And if you're a professional, Google's been this way for the last 10 years or so, right? With really wanting to know if you are an expert in your field. And if you are, and if you can validate that and credibly say so, then Google is your friend. And if you're not, especially in certain areas, they won't be. So anyway, that's kind of my high level thoughts on that. Is that kind of what you were looking for?
Okay. Yeah. And having said that, I'm sharing my thoughts on that. But I think a lot of us that we are running behind that AI stuff, some of the people, they don't know that how to stay ahead of the curve when implementing AI. So that's actually, that's kind of a challenge in the modern industry right now that we are facing. And having said, I am passing over to Sam. For the next question.
Thanks, Phil. There's one thing kind of like stood out from the previous statement that you mentioned that we have to move fast in this current AI world. And I kind of agree with that because at the end of the day, we are trying to kind of find out something that was unknown to us. Like that's what the innovation matters to. So we definitely have to move fast. We have to have that culture of trying different things and see what is kind of like panning out in this AI world. So just wanted to kind of like close the loop on that because I really like that statement that you mentioned, quoting Mark Zuckerberg and the other big techs. Now, this kind of brings me up something we kind of hear a lot. And you touched upon that how people are kind of like started fearing about AI is going to replace human creativity, right? But I just feel like that our approach, not only just thinking about that it's going to replace us, but how we can use AI to enhance our skill set. So in your opinion, how do you ensure that AI-generated work remains personal, professional, and compelling, and it's going to blend with the human expertise and make it like a better and a robust ones in any industry vertical?
Yeah. Huge, right? And some verticals are probably more important than others for that. Just, you know, where all verticals are not the same. And yet I think one of the things that we are going to see more and more going forward is actually advice I've given my clients for more than 10 years. And it's simple two words, be human. Okay. And so, we need to be more human, not less. And that might be scary, you know, for a lot of people, but I've always encouraged my clients, for instance, in marketing to tell stories, to be storytellers, which doesn't mean that your blog post is as, you know, tons of paragraphs about your family reunion, but it's more, I mean, what I like to talk about is being personally professional. Okay? So you bring in stories, about clients, about trends, about what you've seen, about mistakes you see being made. Let's say you're an accountant and you don't want, and Google has not wanted generic stuff for more than 10 years, right? Google has not. And so this really ties in well with this, and it ties in with the human reader as well. So I always say we have two audiences, to my clients, and one is Google. And the other is the human that you're hoping is going to hire you, right? And so especially if you perhaps are an attorney and aren't used to, you know, letting your hair down, as the expression goes, or being a bit more relaxed, you might be a lot more comfortable with generic blog posts, with generic content. You know, this is blah, 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 blah. But nobody has ever liked reading that. Right. And nowadays with AI, it's just, there's a tsunami of this generic content, right? And it's coming over us. And how can we, especially small businesses, expect to, you know, rise to the surface of the waves? I would say it's by putting ourselves into the picture, by telling these stories, by making ourselves human, by making ourselves approachable, right? Because as you know, some professionals may have some a reputation of being not great around people or not even wanting to deal with people. So how can you show yourself as being, you know, head and shoulders above them? Is like, hey, I'm just an ordinary Joe, but you know, I've been doing this for 20 years and I'm an expert and you can trust me on this, but happy to work with you and I'll be great to work with, et cetera, et cetera. Trying to remember what you were talking about, not making it generic, right? Your question was not being sure that the content wasn't generic. And was there something else?
Oh, it's more about like, you know, how we can ensure that the AI generated work remain personal, professional, and compelling. Like it will be a blend of human expertise as well as the AI related stuff that's going to enhance the work by itself.
Yeah, I just, if I could finish up on that, I guess one thought is, and I might say this multiple times here today, is you cannot let ChatGPT or Claude or any of these tools be the final arbiter of what goes. You cannot let it do the final draft. You, the human, or a human who works for you and knows your business, has to be the final arbiter and has to go through this very closely. And so that does make using AI a little bit less efficient. And again, in some professions, in some industries, it might not matter that much. But for many, and certainly for the professions, and if you're a tech company and you're actually trying to get people to invest in you, or you're trying to get people to want to work for you or work with you, buy your product, you have to connect, right? And so as best as you can, you need to connect. And so you need to be the person who says, you know, sorry, this is not yet ready for prime time. This, you know, fresh off the AI presses, we're going to need to do some work on this.
Yep. No, can't agree more with you on that. And those of you who are listening to this podcast, our generic response would be AI is not here to replace you or your skill set, but rather to enhance that. You just need to figure out how you can use AI to your better use. Having said that, I'm going to pass it over to Mac for the next segment.
And I completely agree with Phil and Sam on that. But at the same time, I just want to add one more thing. At the same time, you should not be fully rely on AI as well, that AI is going to do your job as well. You still need to be 100% have that ownership that eventually you are the one who is going to implement that. Having said, my next question to Phil is, let's talk about implementation side of it and what are some simple, practical ways small firms can start experimenting with AI today without getting overwhelmed or compromising mm-hmm. their brand voice?
Yeah, great question. And I've got another two-word phrase. Two-word mantra that I often use here. This isn't be human. This is baby steps. So I'm a big believer in baby steps. And, you know, I tend to think of it as, think of it as if I had to lose a huge amount of weight, like 100 pounds, right? And you look at the scale and you're unhappy because the scale says 100 pounds more than you are. More than you want to be. And you say, this is too big a task. I can't do this. Forget it. It's not worth it. So what do? Literally, you do baby steps. Maybe you start walking. If you're not ready to go to the gym yet, you're certainly not ready to run. You start walking and you walk, you know, a quarter of a mile. You walk around the block and then you walk half a mile. And I think that's the way that we need to look at AI. Or that folks who haven't yet gotten into it or haven't gotten into it as much as they would like, need to look at it is baby steps. You can ramp up and, you know, it all becomes easier once you do it, just like exercising becomes easier and part of your life. And you will get the same type of dopamine rush as I swear that as you do when you exercise, from using AI. And some of them, I will get it, not even from using AI, but from thinking about it. It's the aha moment. I want it. I'm going to use this for this. Right. And then the second when you do it, you say, oh my gosh, this is amazingly good. Right.
Absolutely.
Well, on the one hand, I mentioned in the last question how, you know, you can still get tons of errors. You'll get citations that are fake, that go nowhere. And you think, oh, good, all these resources, this is great, but they go nowhere. 404 error, right? And so, but what you want to do here, to get back to what we're talking about, is start off small, start using it. I'm a believer, like for professionals, in other words, that come out of the marketing environment. So that's an easy place to use it. Use it for ideation. Use it to think about, let's say you're, you know, a dentist and you have a blog post and you're not good about, you know, writing those blogs because it takes a lot of time. You can't think of good subjects. You're a solo practitioner or you're a solo dentist, so you don't have anyone to bounce ideas off of. You go to ChatGPT and you tell them your story, right? And you say, this is the situation. I need some, what would be some good ideas? And all of a sudden, you know, ask for 5 to 10 ideas. And you can, you know, again, the more that you focus on, or the more that you spell out, we get into prompt engineering. We could do a whole session on that. Basically, more detail, the better, and talk to ChatGPT as if you're talking to a trusted but unreliable assistant. Okay. That sound a little odd. Trusted, maybe instead of trusted, I want to say smart. So you've got a very smart human assistant in your office, but maybe you can't always trust them to come into work, right? So I don't know what's going on there, but they don't always come into work, or sometimes they'll say outlandish things and you can't trust them. ChatGPT, you start bringing them in. And I'm a huge believer in setting up a custom GPT, right? And it's easier than ever these days. And you can set one up for yourself, for your firm. You know, you bring in your web content, you bring in anything else that makes sense. Talk to them about your clients. You can talk to them about the problems that your clients have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden you're coming up with great ideas that might even be timely. You can ask, hey, can you tie this into, you know, the new tax bill or anything like that, that just passed. And then all of a sudden you've got these great ideas, and then you can take the next step and you can ask it to do a draft, you know. And if you have a custom GPT that you've set up with your voice, with your tone, with how you want to come off, then all of a sudden you have more and more a trusted assistant right there that you can help.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I actually love your statement as well. Like, if someone doesn't know where to start, how to start, they should first start with a baby step, right? So first baby step, then walk, and then run.
So that's right. And everyone will have a different sort of epiphany, you know, these, or epiphanies, plural. And I can't tell you, or I can't tell someone over here, when or what's going to give them that epiphany. You could get one on Friday night. You're out, you're having dinner, and it pops in your head. Oh my gosh, I could try this. You can't wait to get home and try that, right? Because it's, it truly is such a change and such a big change. I would say, especially for small businesses and startups and solos, because you will be able to do so much more than you have in the past. It can take some time, so don't put too much pressure on yourself. You know, if you need to lose 100 pounds, that'll take a few months. So don't put too much pressure, but the baby steps, and you can do it. So,
can't agree more on that. So I'm going to pass it over to Sam for the next question.
Thanks, Mac. I love the way this discussion is shaping up, to be honest with you. I'm enjoying it. I'm pretty sure our listeners are also following it as well. As we are going into this AI revolutionary stuff, you know, there's so many things going on, right? And it's continuing to like reshape the industry, even the white collar workforce, right? So Phil, I mean, what do you think the professional need to understand or need to do to stay relevant and thrive? Because there's so many things going on, right? Sometimes if you go onto the LinkedIn, especially nowadays, feel like drinking from the fire hose, right? That all these AI innovations going on everywhere. So what's your strategy and how do you, you know, recommend, what do you recommend to the professionals to stay relevant and thrive and also thinking about what else they could do with that AI superpower?
Yeah. I think that's going to be one of the most important questions over the next couple years, 5 years, what have you. And as you guys have seen, the news articles and the experts from the big consulting firms, do not all agree as to what's going to happen employment wise, right? Some folks have told me that big swaths of middle management are just going to go away. And you know, from what I've seen, actually, ChatGPT can be, folks would argue, by definition, ChatGPT, generative AI, does not have empathy, okay? And yet it can mimic empathy pretty well, right? And it can also, I think, look at things in a much more rational, frankly, and logical way, I hate to say this, than a lot of executives out there, maybe a lot of professionals, you know, because they'll, you know, they might say to themselves, well, yeah, I guess I should put Joe on this project, but I've always liked working with Bob better. So I'm going to put Bob on this project because I like him better than Joe. ChatGPT wouldn't do that. I mean, ChatGPT will help you. I don't think I'm overstating it, right? Get to, you know, what are the rational decisions you need to make? When looking at the real rock stars of today and the future, I think they're going to be what I call Renaissance professionals. You know, back in the old days, centuries ago, they'd be Renaissance men, but now we have Renaissance men and women. So let's call them Renaissance professionals. And it's professionals, it's executives, it's entrepreneurs, everyone I'm including in that, who are able to straddle these different worlds, right? They're able to straddle the tech world and they're able to straddle the business world. And they can speak both languages. And they can speak to the folks in the trenches. They can communicate, you know, to the CEO, and they can communicate equally well to the CTO, right? They get it. And to the, you know, the code monkeys, right? I mean, everybody. And so that's a rare talent, right? I mean, is that a Steve Jobs I'm talking about? I mean, he was the rarest of the rare, but I think that's kind of who a lot of us, even if we don't get to Steve Jobs' level, we want to strive for, is the ability to straddle these two worlds, right? To understand people, to be able to communicate with them, to be able to sell. Sales is huge. And who are the best salespeople? Often it's those who do have this empathy. Or at least, you know, great communication skills. You know, I think that while that might be too high a bar, it's worth working on for all of us. And so therefore, I think each of us needs to figure out, what am I less good at? And what can I, you know, which side of my brain, which hemisphere of the brain is less strong? And do I, in a sense, need to send it to the gym? I need to work on my coding skills, right? I need to work on my communication, and we can all get better, right? We need to be lifelong learners. And so, you know, you've probably seen the stories of people coming out of college, this year, and, you know, job offers are down and a lot of them are having tough times. China, what's happening is more and more of the Chinese who used to be fine with just a bachelor's degree are going back for a master's degree. And they're hoping that that helps to elevate them. And I think that can and that could, but that's not all, right? You need to really think of what's the Renaissance man or woman that you can use as a model. And if you can mimic that in the best way possible, you will do fine in this world. Just, you need to speak the different languages, right? You need to be able to hang with the different groups of people. And if you can do that and you've got that creativity, sharp brain, you know, boom, 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 you'll be good, right? You'll be good.
Love it.
That's a high bar, right?
That's a high bar, but I love it, you know. And for our listeners, the words of the day, professionals. So watch out for those people. Either try to be one of them or try to collaborate with them, because they're the people who will be the superheroes or heroines, you know, in this AI journey in future.
They'll be the superstars. Absolutely. And you know, I think just, you know, we all have high goals. We have high aims, and that's how you can get there. You can't get there by, I think, sitting on, you know, this old phrase, what got you here won't get you there. It's not going to work. We all have to be lifelong learners. And it's like you were saying, it's drinking from a fire hose, you know, and that's now an old, that seems like we need to come up with a new expression, because that was big 20 years ago. And now we need something.
Drinking from a fire is a norm. It's an
yes. Drinking from Niagara Falls, you know, it's whatever. I can't believe it. And so it's hope. So I think tied in with that, obviously, is the P word is passion. You need to have a passion for this stuff and what you're doing. And if you do, you know, the old thing is, you know, if you really love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. I don't know if that's exactly true, but I think that's a good way of looking at these things. And if you can find some area of business and AI and everything else that you can feel really passionate about, maybe it's AI for good, maybe it's helping society in some way. Boom, you know, grab it and do it, because, you know, we're still in the first inning here, right? I mean, it's a 9-inning game. At least, but we're still in the first inning. So there's plenty of time for everyone. I think that would be my ultimate, recommendation, is don't feel like, oh, I've missed the boat. Cause, you know, this November, ChatGPT will be out for 3 years and so many people know so much stuff. And that's true. So many people know, and they're building great companies and doing great things, but there's so much more that is going to be done. I mean, this feels like, I don't know, is this the web 1995 or something like that, right? It's still very early in the world of AI. Yeah. So anyway, let me throw it back to you.
Yeah, just to wrap up, you're saying the AI journey is not a sprint race, it's a marathon. So it doesn't matter when you start, you still have to, you know, have things to cover, and you still can be an AI superhero or like superstar. Thanks, Phil. Love it. Over to you, Mac.
Yeah, Phil, I completely agree that what you said. I also want to add actually one more point here. So we are not talking about that AI is also going to create a lot of jobs as well. Even yesterday, I was listening to one of the executives, and he was saying in the Business Insider, like AI is going to create also 500,000 jobs in next 5 years. So we always are hearing about that AI is going to take away the jobs. But on the contrary, we are not saying that maybe who is going to implement the AI into the business, into the strategy, right? So, you know, that we used to do the code. We used to do the, let's say, SQL development. We used to do .NET code, right? But now we need to also think in a different way how we can implement AI as well to do efficient coding. But we still, someone needs to have that knowledge how they can implement AI as well. So there will be a lot of job opportunities as well, like, you know, which will be forthcoming in coming years.
Absolutely. I mean, who in 1990 could have foreseen, you know, web developer or web designer would be a huge thing just a few years from them, right? One thing I've learned is I like to call myself an amateur futurist because I try to figure out what's around the corner. And I think the more that you pay attention to trends, the more you have a sense. But yeah, to your point, we don't really know. At least we can't nail it down or else, you know, we'd be doing that today, wouldn't we? But we do know we need to keep learning, voraciously, as they say, right? Back to you.
Yeah. And my next question, as AI adoption accelerates globally, looking ahead, what kind of governance frameworks or guardrails do you believe are most critical at an organization on national level to ensure responsible and ethical use of AI, especially in high impact industries?
Yeah, that's a big one. Of course, the governance issue stretches from, you know, the organizational to the countrywide, the global. But if we're to focus at least first on the company, I think it's critical that companies, have an AI policy, right? I mean, that's where you can start. And even, you know, if the company is you and your business partner, you should agree on what your AI policy is. You know, what do you use AI for? Are there some things that you will not use it for? Do you reveal to your clients that you are using it, if indeed you will? And of course, I'm big on transparency, so I'm a big believer on that because I just, well, you know me, I talk too much, but you do, and you'll run into, I heard about some business, one consultant who lost their client recently when they told them that they, the consultant, wanted to use AI on the project. And they had an ongoing relationship and the client didn't call them back, didn't return their calls after that. So I think that's a hurdle that some of us will have to get over, and some of the clients, you know, they'll understand eventually that this is like me using a word processor back in the 90s. Sir, I'm going to be using a word processor. Is that okay with you? Right? Oh no, I want you to type out, right? I want you to type these documents, or me saying that I'm using a spell check. I mean, again, it's a few years from now, if not now already, depending on the industry, it's going to seem crazy to everyone if the person they've hired does not use AI, right? So you have to use it. But A, I do believe in transparency. And so part of that, you know, there might be a filtering out of certain clients, agreement to use it for some things, and perhaps not to others. And everyone has to agree to that. And that will change, right, as we go forward. That's not a static thing that goes into, you sign it and goes into a desk drawer. That's going to be changing every few months because, hey, guess what? It's actually really, you know, ChatGPT isn't hallucinating at all anymore. At least it's not the way I'm using it. And this is really amazing. I'm getting, you know, 99% or what have you. But No, were you asking a different question, or were you asking kind of what companies can do in terms of?
I mean, it actually resonates with my questions as well. So, like, my opinion is on that, like, a lot of companies out there, they are kind of confused, like, how they, with their business strategy, how AI implementation is going to be aligned. So, how the governance will look like, right? So there is no such regulations like they can follow. There is no such guidelines. And that's also in another major concerning factor as well. So that's why we also need to implement that responsible AI at the same time that whenever we are implementing AI strategies. And having said that, I'm going to pass it over to Sam for the next question.
Yeah. So thanks, Mac. Thanks, Phil. It was actually very relevant in the timely manner. Because, like, as you mentioned, Phil, that we really need to understand what are the guardrails or the guidelines that we can incorporate in the industry practices to make sure we follow the responsible AI practices that Mac kind of touched upon. Now, I wanted to hear your thoughts on that. That's kind of like industry level guidelines or a company level. What do you think about the national level guideline? What do you think that the Fed or any government or any European or, you know, North American region would implement to make sure that there is a certain level of guardrails or just AI companies that all the industry verticals should follow? So I wanted to hear your thoughts on that, you know, if something that you can quote from any recent AI policy or guidelines news, that'll be great.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's also the $1 million question, right? Or the $1 trillion question. Because we're getting different signals. You know, you look at, originally you go back a month, the big, beautiful bill, here in the U.S., was going to, put a moratorium, a 10-year moratorium on all state level, local level type AI, regulation, or governance. And then it was a bit of a surprise to me and others when all of a sudden then we heard it was down to 5 years, and then it was 0 years. It got struck from it. So where are we? I think we're in a better place because of it, even if it's going to be a bit of a confusing place here in the U.S., because now what does that mean? Well, it's up to states like Colorado and California and others to come through with regulation, and some will, and others won't. And then, but what each of the individual states is working against is just what France is working against on the global picture. And that's that. None of us want our star companies, our star AI entrepreneurs and experts to run for another state or another country to flee because we're putting too many regulations on them, right? So I think that actually, you know, looking at France, there's been some grumbling among real privacy advocates and others that Macron in France is being too easygoing. And it seems like, you know, is France really going the way of the United States? You know, less regulation. Of course, they have, you know, one of the top AI companies in the world is French, and they want to keep that going, right? We were talking about AI cultures and ecosystems here in the U.S. Well, the same can and should be true globally. So how do we do that, and how do companies react to that? That's a tough thing, right? I believe, again, the B word, the balance, you know, I think some regulation is not necessarily a bad thing, certainly when you're dealing with something that can be as dangerous and that can cause a lot of bad things to happen. It's just a tool, but wow, it's like a nuclear bomb tool, right? You want to regulate these things, just like we regulate automobiles. You have to get a license and have insurance. So, should you get a license for using AI? No, not necessarily. But I guess where I'm going with that is I would like to see small companies, startups, entrepreneurs, kind of be put off to the side. If you've got fewer than 50 employees, say, like in Colorado or whatever, fewer than X number of dollars of revenue, then, we should not, or we will not put these restrictions on you, right? Because that would crush you. But once you start getting there and you're coming up with something, or if you're just doing a little AI tool, that's one thing. But to your point, if you're doing high risk kind of stuff, then, you know, I mean, we're at some point we're going to get that that unicorn of a one person AI company that's worth $1 billion, right? I mean, Sam Altman said that a couple of years ago that was coming. I believe it. Right? How could it not come? So just being small, if you're in high risk, we have to do this. I mean, I think we can get there, as a society. And I think we'll all eventually kind of arrive at some kind of, maybe it's too much to ask for, but some kind of, middle ground where most folks can agree and say, this is you know, either this is knee-jerk regulation, meaning this is bad and is just being put out by people who are scared of it unnecessarily. Oh, but this over here, this is reasonable regulation, and this makes sense. So let's have this. And let's not try to drive our entrepreneurs away, because I think entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship is the future of Western civilization. I mean, it has to be, right? We can't rely on, you know, the Fortune 500, Fortune 2000 companies to satisfy all of our needs, whether they're economic, social, or otherwise. So does that get to what you were asking about? I mean, I
no, definitely, Phil. I mean, I guess it's my quoting remarks here, like, with great power comes great responsibility. And AI is the superpower. We just have to make sure that how we're going to regulate it, making sure it is responsible, but not at the risk of slowing down AI innovation. So we just have to strike that balance between innovation and governance. And I think that's the best way to go. Is that correct, Phil? I mean, that does it resonate with your thoughts?
100%. Yeah, we you know, for any society or any state, any individual to say no AI for me, right, is I don't know, suicide in its own way, because we can't put the genie back in the bottle, right? The genie is out of the bottle, and every one of us as an individual using it, as an entrepreneur, as an organization, as a country, we need to come to grips with that, regulate it, you know, in the best way, the best balance that we can. But, you know, it's going to be two steps forward and one step back. We'll make mistakes. There'll be bad things that happen. We have to understand that. You know, literally, it's like we're playing with fire. Excuse the pun, right? But is AI as big as fire? Yes, I think it is, because, you know, that might sound crazy to some people, but it's only a matter of time before, you know, I think, you know, we're all not just wearing Zuckerberg's Ray-Bans, but we've got, you know, a little chip back here. And it's, you know, that won't necessarily be a bad thing. If it's, hey, helping us remember names at parties, or where someone is working now, or whatever else, that's not entirely bad. Making us better humans. So yeah, how ironic is that, right? Making us better humans.
Yeah, definitely. Better. I mean, can't agree more on that. definitely, AI is going to make us probably a better human being, a better thinker, and maybe a better strategic maker. Having said that, I think we are at the end of our Q&A section. So I'm going to pass it over to Mac to the final wrap-up section of this episode.
Yeah, so Phil, this has been incredibly insightful. And so where can our listeners find more of your work and connect with you? His advice.
Oh, great. One of my favorite questions. So everyone can go to coloradoai.news. You can subscribe to Colorado AI News for free there. You can also find me on LinkedIn, and I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. That's I used to be really big into Twitter, doing much less Twitter there. But yeah, and so I still have NCG Strategic Marketing is the marketing firm, and I'm starting a new one called Element 99, and that's going to be focused purely on AI. And it's not just going to be marketing, but marketing consulting and helping businesses to adapt to this new world, right? Because we can't just put a bag over our heads or put our heads in the sand and pretend that this isn't happening. And I think there will not be companies that survive, for the most part, right? Certainly in our world that are not using AI and not using it better and better every month, let alone every year. I mean, that's the key. And that would be my plea to everyone, is just, you know, get into it, try some things, spend $20 a month on ChatGPT, and you'll be amazed at what's around. So yeah, and you can email me at phil@coloradoai.news. But anyway, thank you so much, Mac and Sam, for having me on. And this has been a lot of fun for me, and I hope it's been for you too. So
thanks, Phil. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all of you for listening to this inaugural episode of Inside Assemble AI. If you found this conversation valuable, please subscribe and share it with someone who might benefit from thinking about AI more strategically. Pass it over to Sam.
Thanks, Mac. And Mac and I will be back with more episodes featuring AI leaders, innovators, and strategic thinkers in upcoming weeks. So until next time, this has been our first episode of Inside Assemble AI, delivering our core message to everyone. Keep innovating, but keep it strategic in this AI era. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Thanks very much.